Are you ready for the big game? At The Designery, we can help you arrange your kitchen in the perfect way to feed everyone coming over for the big game. I'm Dana Merrill, the owner of The Designery in North Raleigh.
And I am True Merrill.
The Designery grand opening, we're scheduled to open May 16th and do our grand opening party then. We're going to be catering some food. We're doing some giveaways. We have a VR headset, an Echo Show, some kitchen gadgets, and some fancy knives. 12 to 2 p.m.
Please stop by our showroom, 3030 Wake Forest Road. That's The Designery at thedesignery.com.
I was on WRAL yesterday. They usually don't reach out to me unless something big happens, right? You're on WRAL all the time. Occasionally, I'll get the email saying, hey, you want to talk? We got a big sports thing. And that big sports thing was Frank Reich getting hired by the Carolina Panthers. And Deborah Morgan asked me a question about Steve Wilks. And that's kind of where we're at right now with the Panthers job. It's a multi-prong topic. It's not just a, hey, cool, the Panthers have a new head coach. What's Frank Reich going to do? What are they going to do at quarterback? There's an element that can you think of a time in which it was almost as much about the coach who didn't get the job as it is the coach who did get a job? I'm trying to think about that, at least in professional sports in the state of North Carolina. It certainly wasn't like that for the Carolina Hurricanes. You know, when Bill Peters eventually was red staplered by Tom Dundon, that Rod Brindamore was going to be the guy. And that's what happened, and everybody's happy now. And in years past, it never was about another guy. I can't think of a Panthers head coaching search was about another guy, but this one is.
Yeah, but it's January 27th. By the time they open, we won't even remember.
Yeah. By the time they get...
No, I'm not trying to be crass. I'm not trying to be ignorant to what the guy did, but it's how the cycle works.
Yeah.
We care right now. It just happened. It's fresh. Again, you don't always get what you earn. Mm. So that's life. We know this.
The last
unfortunately, we know there's institutional racism in the NFL as well. Like, yeah. It's part of it.
The last blip we're going to see of this will be on Tuesday for Frank Reich's hiring press conference. If David Tepper is going to be at the podium, even Scott Fitterer will get some of these questions too. It'll be them getting asked questions as to why Wilks didn't get the job. That'll be kind of awkward for Frank Reich, but to your point, after Tuesday's press conference, people will be moving on with their lives. Probably the most out-of-touch take that I saw on social media, and this shows you who's paying attention, who doesn't pay attention, right? The most out-of-touch take that I saw on social media was that the players who bought into Wilks should quit or seek a trade or go somewhere else, except that every indication, if you read the tweets from people who cover the team, it's like, yeah, all the players get it. It's a business. They liked Wilks. They would have been happy if he got the job, but they understand why he didn't get the job. Frank Reich's the guy, and they're moving on right now. So that's where we're at. But that was the topic of conversation on ESPN yesterday and throughout today, with the Carolina Panthers being the only NFL team who's hired a coach so far. Here's Ryan Clark earlier today on ESPN on Steve Wilks not getting the job.
Look at ownership. What is ownership familiar with? Ownership is familiar with themselves. They're familiar with the people that move around in the rooms they move around in. The people in the rooms they move around in as billionaires look like them. They talk like them. They feel, they motivate, they teach like them. And so when they sit in front of people, what do they want? They want people that are like them. And they want that familiar feel, that, oh, that rah-rah, that old frat boy that I'm used to in his excitement, I can get with that. The adversities that he's faced and the things that he's gone through in life, I understand more than I understand the things that Steve Wilks has gone through in life, because I don't know what it's like to be him. I don't know what it's like to have to come up in the ranks like him.
That's Ryan Clark on ESPN earlier today. And then you got Marcus Spears, who brought up the Steve Wilks portion of this hire.
They just hired a coach that got fired for a bad year and season over the coach that almost resurrected their season and got them into the playoffs. If you need any more examples of why these black coaches and why black men like myself, RC, and Stephen A. have these platforms, and Stephen A. gives us the ability to have these platforms and say whatever the hell we want to say when it comes to First Take. If you don't understand why this conversation is near and dear to us and why it doesn't press our feelings and emotion when it comes to that, if it's not about success, if it's not about what you've done, if it's not about the position that you've put yourself in, how do you get them? How do you get these jobs?
That's Marcus Spears on ESPN. These are wonderful conversations that I'm glad are being had, and I'm absolutely thrilled that those who move the discussions on national outlets are being absolutely blunt with what's going on in the NFL. As you say, as you stated, Julio, the institutional nature of this can no longer just kind of be glossed over. Like, we recognize it. And Wilkes doesn't get the job, fine. But how do you prevent it from happening going forward? That's the key. Now, there are people who do like to hire, by the way. We got to highlight that. Here's Dan Orlovsky on ESPN. Loves it. Dan Orlovsky is currently making some bland chicken.
In the last 2 years, this football team has had the worst quarterback play in the NFL. But if you look at the roster, it's got a chance to be a top 10, top 8 defense. They got an up-and-coming offensive line and DJ Moore. So Frank Reich now comes in there, and the question is, does he get the young quarterback? I think Carolina absolutely has to go up in this draft and go get a young quarterback. And the one thing that you can unequivocally say about Frank Reich is he knows how to develop a young quarterback. If you think about what he did with Carson Wentz in Philadelphia, I absolutely love the hire for Carolina.
That's Dan Orlovsky.
Hurts my brain a little bit. So just to clarify, in case someone's driving around out there and they say, what do you mean by institutional racism? The league right now is positioned and the rules are set up and the television money is all for offense.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So the game is a scoring game now. This isn't the Ravens of 2000. This isn't the Bears of 85, the Giants of 86. You can't dominate and win on defense, all right?
Mm-hmm.
The rules will not allow it. So, therefore, you have to be somebody who calls plays effectively or works with quarterbacks to be a head coach. It just so happens that, that the majority of black assistant coaches work on the defensive side of the ball. And how do you get to the other side of the ball? How do we get more... You know, this is really, in the last 10, 15 years, Joe, is really the first real generation of a lot of black quarterbacks, if you think about it, because that's the position. Black centers. How many black centers have we had? Offensive linemen, quarterbacks are the ones who turn into coaches. That's who turn into coaches. And if you don't have that pool to start with, right? So this goes all the way back to how a player matriculates through football. And we associate being black with being more athletic, being a receiver, being a defensive back like Tony Dungy, who is one of two black coaches who has won the Super Bowl. So the real problem for the African American community in coaching is they're on the wrong side of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
When's the last time a receiver was a head coach? I can't even think of one.
Couldn't tell you.
Right? Keyshawn Johnson's the number one guy on ESPN radio.
Yeah.
But a successful Jerry Rice is arguably the greatest football player of all time.
Yeah.
You've seen him on a copper commercial. You've seen him on Dancing with the Stars. Mm-hmm. But nobody's ever Jerry Rice, in my opinion, played for the greatest mind of all time in Bill Walsh. But no one has ever even thought to say, oh, you know who'd be a really great coach? Jerry Rice.
It's how we casually talk about these things, right? How are wide receivers typically positioned when we talk about
it? Well, now they're positioned as divas. Jerry Rice was never positioned as a diva.
I mean, wide receivers have always been positioned as, not divas per se, but it was very much a selfish position to get the yards, right? And we usually view quarterbacks as the smartest guys on the field. Quarterbacks are predominantly white. The real interesting part is, and we'll talk to Bomani Jones about this in the next hour, as Josh Allen and Joe Burrow have shown you, there's this attitude of, oh, okay, there's these athletic white guys, too, that are playing quarterback, and they're kind of unleashing them. I'll be curious to see if there's an influx of athletic QBs and running QBs where you end up having opportunities for them to be on the offensive side of the ball. But it's not like we don't have former black QBs who are offensive coordinators. Look at Byron Leftwich. But that gets into the other aspect of it, to what Ryan Clark talked about. And that is, what circles do you run? This happens in college oftentimes, too.
When Leftwich was in the NFL, though, he was like, it was like him and Steve McNair. God rest his soul. Steve McNair's not with us anymore.
Yep.
So it's like, that's what really needs to happen. This whole generation, Russell Wilson. You're telling me Russell Wilson couldn't be a coach? Of course he could.
He could be a coach. He'd have a great social media team, though.
Well,
he might be better.
I'm just saying that the whole thing.
Yeah,
that's why I say it's institutional.
It is. No, you're absolutely.
I know we got one more second here to the break, but Jeff Saturday gets plucked out of ESPN because he's passionate and he was a really good football player.
Yeah,
I get that Michael Irvin has some troubled legal issues in his past.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. The owner of the Colts has some of those same issues.
The same issues, yes.
You're telling me Michael Irvin isn't as passionate and isn't as knowledgeable at football as Jeff Saturday is? But nobody wants Michael Irvin to be their coach.
There's a better example that's playing out right now. It's Deion Sanders.
Sure.
As passionate as he is.
Where did he play primarily?
Right.
The defensive side of the ball.
So he had to basically create his own job in order to get an opportunity where he has now
at Colorado.
So we'll see how that plays out.
Thank you for listening to the Best of the Drive podcast. We're here with Coach Pete, Capital Financial Advisory Group. Coach, let's hear about your power plan.
Well, Coach Pete's power plan, 22 steps to get you on the right direction for retirement. Also, make sure you have a successful, income-filled retirement. Tim, the next 10 people are going to give that away. No cost or obligation.
For the power plan, call 800-691-3215. You can also go ahead and text Tim to 600-700. The phone number, 800-691-3215, or text Tim to 600-700.
Mark Packer, part of the ACC Network, longtime radio host, tweeted out late last night, "The Packer family would like to share some sad news. Our amazing father, Billy, has passed away. We take peace knowing that he's in heaven with Barb. R.I.P. Billy," with a family photo in front of the Packer residence. And with Packer's passing, with Billy Packer's passing, it's another reminder that what the foundational pieces of why you enjoy college basketball, or more specifically, the foundational pieces of why people enjoy and why it means a lot for ACC basketball. Joe, Billy Packer was a big reason for that in the way he called the games, really pulled no punches in how he went about things.
Amazing insight. Too. He had a great feel for every game that he called.
Mm-hmm.
It was amazing when you think about.
But
at the risk of shortchanging him, back when there were eight teams, and they played twice a year, and nobody ever transferred, guess what it's easier to do? Have an understanding of the teams. But he had a tremendous feel. The NCAA tournament, I know a lot of people, they just want to hear, you know, rainbows and lollipops sometimes, and that was not Billy Packer.
No, it was not.
But his analysis was always spot on. And again, anticipatory, also kind of understanding, okay, this is what the team trailing needs to do to win the game, and this is what the team that's leading needs to do to hang on and win the game. And obviously, he was the voice of the Final Four for...
forever.
As long as I can remember.
Yeah, it was nearly 30 years of doing Final Four calls, going all the way back to 1983. Dennis, I don't know if you have we all know.
I mean, they won it on the dunk.
We know. Well, but this is the thing. Like, for those who might not be aware, we always hear the radio call, the NC State radio call. We hear, you know, Cinderella has done, you know, all this other stuff, right? The glass slipper fits, you know, all that stuff. But the Billy Packer call on TV is actually pretty good, too. So here's the end of NC State's win over Houston in the championship in 1983.
Stolen by Drexler. Boy, is he good at
that. Got a drive to the basket. It's down to 7 seconds.
You can see the time. Wittenberg. Oh, it's a long ways. Oh!
They won it. On the dunk.
On the dunk. So there you go. So that's Billy Packer in 1983. But for a younger generation, including, well, I don't consider myself a younger generation. Jillio, we're not in the younger generation. But, you know, in the 2000s, Billy Packer was a part of some pretty interesting calls, too, right? So you got 1983. You also have what happened in, what was it, 2008 against Kansas, North Carolina, Kansas.
Well, this is his last one.
So this was the last one. So this is 2008 Kansas. We're not bringing this up to pick a scab or whatever it is. Just that Billy Packer is just as much a part of this story, that game, because of this call that we still reference today.
Rush way outside three. Of course. This game is over. Is it?
Jim Nance tries so hard right there.
Wow. We're 7.5 to go in the first half. Kansas.
I think Jim Nance, like the TV guy in Jim Nance, is going, man, we need people to watch. Billy, come on now. But that was Billy Packer. It's like, I'm telling you what I see. And that's what made him great. This game is, and he said it so kind of cavalier, like, man, this game's over. He was saying what we all thought, man. And people to this day still remember that call. But when you are as pointed with your commentary as Billy Packer is, you can rub some people the wrong way, or you are insistent in how you saw some things, and that actually played out in the very famous Gerald Henderson, Tyler Hansborough elbow to the face, forearm to the face. And here's the Billy Packer portion of this that still has people today mad about it.
Hansborough gets him right back in for another rebound. Watch out. He took a shot to the face.
And, you know, he is a tough guy. He's hot, but he took a shot there, and the blood is coming out, so he's not going to be shooting these free throws. And obviously, the contact was strong, but Henderson was not looking for a cheap shot there. But the fans are booing something that was not an intentional foul. Henderson's coming across the lane, and it was elbow on nose.
So there you go.
Usually doesn't work too well for the nose.
No, it does not. That's Billy Packer on that very famous Carolina Duke game at the Smith Center that resulted in Hansborough's bloody nose. Was he playing? I don't think he was playing the ball, but you know, is what it is, right?
He did the local games too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he did the Raycom,
yeah,
pilot,
with the pilot, all that stuff.
He just, the depth of his knowledge was.
Luke DeCock, columnist for the News and Observer, and I kind of went back and forth on this, and I had pointed this out on social media, because his point is that Billy Packer calls back a time in calling ACC basketball games that doesn't exist anymore. Well, there's simple reasons to explain why that doesn't exist anymore, and I don't think it has to do with the style of Billy Packer. I still think a style like Billy Packer can exist today. Somebody who is enthusiastic, I think somebody is enthusiastic about the sport as he was, that can be pointed and also back it up. That's the key part here. You got to be able to back it up sometimes. But that's gone out the window, mainly because networks and conferences are now partners. They don't broadcast your games. They're in partnership with your conference, right down to the ACC network or the SEC network. So it's not the fans that wouldn't allow this to exist. It is administrators, coaches, that get so up in arms about anything perceived negative that it's not really going to allow for a Billy Packer to exist. And they have to be very careful about this. That's why Billy Packer can't exist today. It's not fans. It's the conferences themselves that he helped get into homes. That's the ironic part. This man helped you. He's an AC. We use ACC legend tongue-in-cheek all the time now, right? When I say Billy Packer is an ACC legend, I mean that with all sincerity. And as much as nobody remembers Billy Packer, the Wake Forest player, because it happened back, what, in the 60s?
I mean, I'm sure there are some people who do.
There are. Shout out to Tim Peeler. I'm sure he remembers it. So what I'm getting at is, for most people, their knowledge of Billy Packer comes from the broadcast side. And as many memories as you have about the basketball games that you watched, there's just as many that remember Sail with the Pilot. If Dennis were to bump back with the Jefferson Pilot intro music, people would, like, it would take him to a place, man. And that's just as important to the growth of the league. And Billy Packer, clearly a big part of that. So, rest in peace. He truly was an ACC legend.
Did you know that your unused medications could end up in the wrong hands? It's important to keep your medication secure in a locked location, such as a locking box or locking cabinet. When it's time to dispose of them, safely and properly dispose of old, expired, or unused meds by using an at-home disposal product or a medication disposal box in your community. Don't miss out on medication take-back events happening near you. Don't let anyone take what's yours. Lock your meds. Be aware. Don't share. Learn more at lockyourmeds.org/NC.